Yeah, good day, Bach. We are in Chayvus Halvavos, Shachesh Ben HaNefesh. We are in the middle of Shachesh Ben HaNefesh, Perek Gimel. We're in the middle of Hachesh Ben Hachi. Okay, we've been discussing the Chayvus Halvavos' very profound discussion about tefillah. Okay. So we're going to start from the middle, from the words vida. I have a little bit of a feeling that we left the question hanging last week. Does anybody know? It's been a lot since last week. Okay. Vida. Chavis Halvos admonishes us as follows. He says, vida. Ki amilois tienabala. He's talking about the understanding that davening, the very external element of davening, is composed of words that you say. But it is mainly about where your mind and heart is. Tefillah is primarily a matter of the mind and heart. And therefore, he says like this, Da ki amilois tiena baloshen kaklipa. The words that you say with your mouth are like the shell of the davening. The shell is an important part of food, but if I offer you just an eggshell, perfectly intact, but there's nothing inside it, you're not gonna have much use for it. Orange peels, I don't know, people eat them with chocolate, or I don't know, but if you just have the shell without the shell is important for keeping the food good, right? The ian bamilois kalev, but your focus on the words is like the heart, like the fruit that's surrounded by the shell. Atfilo kaguf, or another way of saying it, is that the tefillah, meaning the act of tefillah, the davening, the words that you're saying, is like the body. Va'iyun karuach, but the mind that you're putting into it, the thought that goes into it, the concentration, is like the neshama. Ukshe, and if you do the davening with your mouth, tefillah, while in your mind and heart you're in all kinds of other places. It's a joke that they say, which kind of like it's an ironic joke, but they say that part of the reason that Jews are such successful business people is because they have three times a day where they just step out of everything they're doing and they can just put their focus on making their accounts and planning strategy. So we don't like to think in those terms, but the Chavos Halvavos is trying to get us away from that. So when a person, or the way they told us about it in elementary school, at the same point, just they said it in other words, if you suddenly find yourself in the middle of a baseball game, and all of a sudden you feel a bang on your chest and you wonder what, who just hit me, and then you have, oh, I was actually in the middle of Shemini Esrei and I just did Slach Lanu. Right? So if a person is busy davening with his mouth, with his tongue, v'livoi tarud bezulas mina tefillah, while his mind and his heart are busy with all kinds of other things. So tia tefillasa guf b'loyruach. So he says the tefillah is like a body without a neshama. Uklipa beloylev. It's like a shell without the heart, without the food inside it. Because you have your body there, veliboy balimoy is tfilasoy. But your mind and your heart are not on board, they're somewhere else. And about such things, the pasuk says, Ya'an ki nigash ha'om hazeh. Yes, this nation approaches me. Kibduni. They're honoring me with their mouth and lips. But the heart is somewhere else. This is actually the source for the term lip service. This is mamish what the pasuk is saying. They honor me with their lips, meaning they're saying all the right words. Right. So we began touching last week on, hey, let's continue another mashal, and then we'll again bring it into perspective. So umashlu ze oin. A mashal was given about this was the following mashal. Let's say I have a servant. Now, when we say eved here and adon, we don't mean a slave in the sense of, a cotton plantation. We mean a servant, let's say a minister of a ruler. Okay? And the ruler, his master, is actually going to be coming to visit him. So on this day, this person knows that he's going to be getting a visit from the governor. So he wants to make sure that the governor gets an appropriate greeting in his house. So what does he do? Tziva ishto. So he instructs his wife and his family to show him a lot of honor. He says, "Listen, I want you to make sure that the house is spick and span, sparkling clean. I want it to be a beautiful meal laid out." Yeah, the minister is getting a visit from the governor, from the ruler. So he tells his whole family, "We have to make sure that the house is sparkling, that you have the most beautiful china laid out, the most beautiful meal has to be spread out." Okay, he's making sure that everything is right. And he gives them all the rules about how to act with honor and dignity. And to take care of anything that the master might need. So he makes sure that it's all set up perfectly. And then what? He goes to the ball game. Okay? But he makes sure there's going to be a beautiful lunch. And his whole family knows how to act with a lot of respect. Just he won't be home. That's an incidental side point. So similar to the mashal we said last week, right? So v'halachu v'isasek b'simcha v'mischaik, and he went, I don't know, to the billiard room. And he wasn't actually there serving him at that lunch. And to show him that honor. And to do everything that would have been appropriate to do. So what happened? The ruler came in, was impressed by the beautiful spread. He sits down, and the man's wife and family and also the man's servants are all fawning over him, and he's very happy. And he looks around, and he says, "Okay, where's the balabais? Where's Jim?" I said, "Oh, Jim is attending a comedy show somewhere else, right? So how will he take that? He's not going to send him a text saying, 'Well, I missed seeing you, but it was a beautiful lunch. Thank you.' No." He says, he was very offended. He wasn't interested in all that honor that he showed him remote control. He threw it all back in his face. Because the main element of honor is being there yourself. So he said the same goes for davening. It can also be the same thing. You can have your body there. You make sure. Legs. Are you used to standing together, right? Straight. Okay. Then you say shoulders. Are you used to shuckling? You know what to do? You know the words by heart? Okay. Bye, guys. And you leave the body there to do its thing. And mind goes somewhere else. So, kena mispala. So, the same thing goes for a person who's davening. Shelibo. If his mind and his heart, his consciousness are nowhere near the tefillah. They're somewhere else. Kelmi, but he says to Hashem, "But look what a beautiful tefillah I'm davening. I'm shuckling at a rate of 70 shakes a minute." Okay? So Hashem says, "Lo, Hashem is not going to accept tefillah, even though his body is all busy with it and his tongue is going a mile a minute." Hashem says, "I'm not interested."
Wait a minute. But we spoke about last week.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Then forget about davening. Yeah. If Hashem's going to throw it back in our face, we stand there and our mind wanders, then why
That's right.
daven?
So basically, yeah, if we take this in very practical perspective, this is like a very geschmacka kind of thing to really talk about very passionately because we all understand what's being said here. But where does that leave us? Okay. So Right. We're going to have to come back and put this into practical perspective for ourselves. But before doing that, I want to put us through the ordeal of having it thrown at us by the Chovas HaLevavos from his perspective, from his discipline of 1,000 years ago. So let's first have it thrown in our face, appreciate the truth of it, at least in the theoretical sense, meaning realizing that it's not going to work for us. But we're expanding our horizons by exposing ourselves to the way it should work. So let's finish doing that, and then we'll come back and adjust it for ourselves, meaning this doesn't fit us. It's not our size. We'll have to make it fit us. But let's again expose ourselves and continue getting it over the head. So we go further. Look what we say at the end of our davening. How do we finish off Shemoneh Esrei? What are the words that we finish off with? I know that we say Yisrael Shalom afterwards and we say Yisrael afterwards, but those are actually the words that conclude the formal halachic davening. Once you've said that, there's a lot more things you're allowed to say afterwards. You weren't allowed to talk up until that point. But those, the Yil L'Ratzon is actually the formal conclusion of Yishmana Esri, those words. So, what do those words mean? Those words mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yil L'Ratzon Imri Fi Ve'Egen Libi L'Fanecha. You say to Hashem, may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be pleasing to you. So now the Chovas HaLevavos says, that should be rather humiliating. Because what if Hashem comes and says, okay, the words of your mouth and the thoughts of your heart are going to be pleasing to me. What were the thoughts of your heart? I said, I was thinking about something that happened yesterday. So what do you want to be pleasing about that? So, Chia, if Lamaisa, your mind was on something else. We're not getting into whether it was appropriate thought or not, but it's a different thought. You were busy planning, I don't know, a shopping trip and trying to remember how much lemon juice do we have left in the closet. Perfectly fine, just not at this time, right? So, and then you conclude your tefillah by saying, V'hegen libi lefanecha Hashem, here, look at the thoughts of my heart, and may they be pleasing to you. Haloise gnai gadol, isn't that a terrible disgrace? Sheyit'an, that a person claims, he's basically telling Hashem, you're basically telling Hashem, look, I just had all kinds, I was expressing, my heart was expressing all kinds of things. V'liboy. Well, the heart wasn't there bichlal. And not only that, and you're telling Hashem, please look at the beautiful thoughts of my heart. May they be pleasing to you. Well, the Maaseh said there were no thoughts of the heart. So boy. So he brings Psuk into this effect. Okay, if you Ma'amori Chazal. Let's quote some of these Ma'amari Chazal again, really in order to underscore the question that you just raised. But let's see them the way they were said. Amu Chazal, Chazal said, Yamud Adam Atzmai, a person should assess, Im Yochel Lechaven Eslibo Yispalo, if you can really focus your heart davening, Im Laval Yispalo, and if not, not. So again, most of us are going to say, wow, 2 hours of my day just freed up, right? Rabbi Eliezer, Bishas, and Rabbi Eliezer said, as when he was being nifter, Talmidav, when he was giving his final instructions to his talmidim, he said, Shatamispalim, Dulifnimiatamispalim. When you're davening, know who you're talking to. The pasuk says, He kindly cross Yisrael. Prepare yourself toward your encounter with your God. Yisrael. And Chazal said, Al tas tfiloscho keva l'rachmim v'tachnunim v'fnei ha'mokoyim. Don't make your tefillah into something robotic. It has to be a constant supplication, asking for rachamim, an emotional plea to Hashem. Okay, etc. So coming back to this point, the Chovas HaLevavos is telling us something that we're all experiencing the same thing, that it all makes sense, right? It all makes sense, but we're coming and saying, but what can we do? We don't make sense. Meaning, it's just not going to work. It can all make sense, but it's just not going to work. So here we're going to recap. We have to reiterate this and stress this again and again. We have to tell ourselves it's true. Essentially, our davening is not appropriate. It's like the Chovas HaLevavos says elsewhere. You might have to ask for forgiveness for the way you asked for forgiveness. I ask forgiveness with your mind somewhere else. Yet, as we said, Hashem knows our state. And Hashem cherishes us in that state. It's like if you think of a parent who has a whole bunch of really successful, intelligent, brilliant children, okay? And then she has one impaired 3-year-old child. And when she's looking at her, highly successful children, she wants to see impressive reports, impressive report cards, impressive exams, et cetera, right? But if this kid comes and shows her something, I think we said last week, like a very crude picture, and it says, I love mommy, and it's with all the wrong letters, she's proud of it, right? She's proud of it, and she not it's not a show. She really is moved by what this child made for her. Even if her 28-year-old successful son would have given her such a thing, she would be offended, right? So we have to appreciate that, yes, we are the younger, excuse me for saying it this way, but we are the more younger, more spiritually impaired siblings in the family. The generations of the Chovas HaLevavos, their spiritual capacity was much greater. But the truth is that we see that the issue of kavanah and davening was an issue from very early on. Even the Gemara is already talking about it. The Gemara is already talking about it. The Gemara talks about being drunk without wine. And the Gemara says it in a very serious way, of just because of all the stresses that we are dealing with on a regular basis. And the Gemara talks about tefillah as a type of thing that always has to be reinvigorated. And therefore, having heard everything that we just said now, we understand that Hashem is coming and telling us, yet I want your tefillahs because you mean a lot to me. It might be a tefillah that in a vacuum is not really so impressive, but you mean a lot to me. And I know that you don't have the same spiritual capacity as the Chovas HaLevavos had. And I know that concentration is difficult. And I know that there are so many things going on. And there's also a lot of ordeals that people are contending with, and all these things make it difficult. And therefore, Hashem says, yes, in a vacuum, you might have felt like just hiding your tefillah behind your back after hearing what the Chovas HaLevavos has to say and hearing all the things that Chazal had to say. But Hashem is telling us, give it to me anyways. I want it anyways. So, what's the implication on us? The implication on us is that let's at least do it with the correct sentiment, with the sentiment of appreciating that fact itself, appreciating the fact that Hashem is saying, I know your tefillah looks a little skimpy. I want it anyways. And we take in that warmth and we appreciatively and humbly hand him our tefillah. Now, this doesn't mean we should just write off kavanah and say, all right, so forget about it. Hashem says he's happy to take our humble tefillahs. I'm happy to offer humble tefillahs from now till, right? No. Part of what we're making Hashem proud of is by the fact that, okay, Hashem, you recognize my feebleness, my frailty. But here, look, I'm making these efforts. I want to make that crude picture. I want to try to make it that much nicer. This is giving Hashem great nachas. And the very fact that we're capable of feeling that humility, I think we said last week, like instead of coming and telling Hashem, Hey, Hashem, I gave you 15 minutes of my time. Yeah, look, right? But we come with a certain humility and we say to Hashem, I know that this is essentially not what it feel would look like. I'm overwhelmed by the fact that you're telling me I want it anyways. And here I'm giving it to you with a sense of inadequacy. That actually makes Hashem cherish it that much more, because then you know what? We're packing our tefillah with that much more anava, with that much more of a sense of where we really stand with Hashem. And that actually makes your tefillah that much more valuable. Often, faulty products, when we're talking about Hashem, when we're talking about Hashem, faulty products that we offer Hashem can often hold that much more value for him, so to speak, than a perfect product, which comes with a sense of self-satisfaction, self-righteousness. Wow, Hashem, you weren't expecting this, were you? And rather, we're coming with a product that's faulty, yet it is packed with something that Hashem loves much more. And what is that? That anava, that humility. And that actually can make it more beautiful than the beautiful product. This is something to appreciate.
But is your vision of the Shem looking at you as what you don't do or what you do do? Like,
That's right.
and so when you're looking at Jews that you think aren't what we would call from, you have no idea how a Shem's looking
That's
at
right.
them. You know, he might be, because you don't know where they come from, what the challenges they have, education they had. They might be doing an act of Hesed that they don't even know is Hesed, but he might be so thrilled over the moon over it. Like, we can't begin to imagine how Hashem is judging,
Let me
right?
underscore what you're saying. As soon as we do start looking at people critically, then we're going to have to quickly turn the mirror around to ourselves, right? And that we'd prefer not to do, So absolutely, particularly in our times, we may live, we were in earlier times when all of Klal Yisrael was in an absolutely sterile environment. Everybody was exposed to top standards. There was nothing else to be exposed to.
There was an interview up.
What's that? There were such periods. There were such periods. They were few and far between, but they were very golden. The days of Shlomo was like that to a large extent. Certain periods in the days of the Shoftim and days of Shmuel HaNavi, certain periods, certain elements of the days of Chizkiah, there were such times. Even in the Bais Sheni, there was a period of a short little period in the days of Shimon ben Shetach where we had a certain high. But then it would be a different story, but it's true. In our times, we're at the tail end of a long, rigorous, and demoralizing galus. And yeah, every person is really growing up in a different world, even people who are growing up in the same family. They're right. There's no way to really be able to look at it. Yeah, well, you have to be God, meaning in order to really be able to look at another person and see what their story is. That's true. I will, though, say that on the other hand, we do have to have a broad sense of what is right, what is wrong. We have to be able to say this kind of behavior is wrong. Now, that person who's doing it, I don't know what their challenges are, but yet we don't want to get to a place of saying, well, everything could be right because it depends where you're coming from. No, these behavior A, B, and C is what we expect to see. Behavior X, Y, and Z are things that we totally disapprove of. Yet, to have the ability to distinguish and say, but if I see a particular person, what do I know about where they're coming from? What do I know about what their challenges are? What do I know about what's going on in them? It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah, so Hashem let B'nai Yisrael drop to the 49th level of Tumah before he took them out. So, like, when's Mashiach coming? Are we dropping like that and he's waiting for us to drop? I don't really understand why he let them drop so far before he came to rescue
Asking
them.
very, very, very poignant and painful questions. You can't give a full answer to it. Well, let's give a partial answer, an answer that's relevant as far as we go. I'll say it like this. Well, okay, I'm going to elaborate. Things drop. And the question is, why does Hashem allow things to deteriorate? What is it that Hashem wants from us? So we have to appreciate a few things. First of all, we have to appreciate that there are different types of kvod shamayim. There are different ways of bringing glory to Hashem. In the most ideal sense, what is Hashem's glory? Hashem's glory is when all of Klal Yisrael is operating at top standard and in a pristine environment, and all of Klal Yisrael is just shining with Hashem's glory. That's one element of glory. But there are different types of glory, different flavors of glory. And sometimes there's a flavor of, this is really our place. Our place is to be able to appreciate that sometimes the glory is in the fact that when everything is seems to be at such a low, and yet we are holding on to the things that we can, and we are pushing in the areas where we can push, and not just allowing ourselves to get swept up by what seems to be a current of deterioration, that can be something that brings Hashem very, very great pride that wasn't relevant for earlier generations. It's a form of glory to bring to Hashem that wouldn't have been relevant in the great times of the first Beis HaMikdash. It's the personal struggles within all that confusion, pain, darkness, deterioration. But yet Hashem says, look at these people who are holding on, not letting go. And therefore, we have to appreciate a very powerful point that the Kuzari makes. He says that the door after Mashiach, this is Hashem, we're hoping that that's going to be the next door. The door after Mashiach are going to be looking back at us, at our generation, as heroes and saying, how could they possibly have done that? They were put up against such challenges and we're also so limited in our spiritual abilities, and yet we battled for the small things, so to speak. And those small things are very, very big when we think of them in these terms. These are things that are Hashem, bringing Hashem's special pride that, in a way, that wasn't relevant 1,000 years ago and in the glorious days of 3,000 years ago. I'll bring it out in another way. You know, we if I were to ask, if I were to ask you, communist Russia. You'll take that as the time that epitomizes darkness. And in the real thick of communist Russia. Was that a dark time or a bright time for the Jewish people? Obviously, it's a dark time. But now let's dig a little deeper. And I'm paraphrasing a point that Rav Dessler makes. And I'm going to get a little, bear with me, I'm going to get a little bit mathematical here. Let's say you could weigh averus and mitzvahs in pounds. Okay? Let's say you could weigh averus and mitzvahs in pounds. Let's have a person who decides to be Mechalel Shabbos just because. They enjoy Shabbos, they know about Shabbos, they've been keeping Shabbos their whole life. But now they say, you know what? I'm in the mood right now, I don't care. That's an aveira that has a lot of pounds to it, right? Now let's have a person who's the same Chilul Shabbos. In halachic terms, it's the same thing. But A, it's a person who comes from a much weaker background, barely knows about Shabbos, is trying to keep Shabbos, and yet is facing a situation where if they're not Mechalel Shabbos, they are going to Chas v'Shalom, let's say lose a limb. Okay? And they're facing that test. And they fall. They both were Mechalel Shabbos. If you're talking about the halachic parameter of what they both did, it's the same thing. But is it the same? If we're gonna weigh the averus with pounds, right? One is gonna be a very heavyweight avera, the other is gonna be, you know, we can't really talk this way, but for our illustrative purposes, A lightweight aveira. There's no such thing. But for our purposes, everybody with me on this? Now let's turn it the other way around also. In mitzvahs also, there is, again, this is a form of speech. There's no such thing as a lightweight mitzvah. But for our purposes, relative purposes, you can have a more lightweight mitzvah because it came easy, it was supported by the environment, etc., etc. I'm used to it. And then you can have a mitzvah that was done with a lot of determination, sacrifice, etc. Again, the same mitzvah, but one was done with much more weight. I remember the night before one of our children's bris, I was running around, and as people tend to do on the days leading up to them, I was running around and I was stopped. I summoned a hunk, a very fine yid from us as Mordechai, a Russian Jew, a very firm yid, very exemplary yid. He offered me a ride. I got into the car and I told him we're making a bris tomorrow. And he said, "Ah, you're making a bris tomorrow. Wow." And then he started reminiscing about the brisen that he made for his children back in Russia. And he talked about the fear of a knock on the door, not just at that moment, but he said for 2 weeks afterwards, they were waiting apprehensively for the knock on the door from the neighbor who got wind of something or whatever it is. Okay, and they made it, closed doors, shuttered windows. There was no minyan. There was no suda, right? They did the bris. Okay, you're talking about a very heavyweight mitzvah. So now let's take communist Russia. The Jews in Russia were put through spiritual destruction, right? Now, you have a Jew who grew up in communist Russia. He's Mechalel Shabbos. Again, we don't usually talk in these terms, but how heavyweight of an aveira is that? Under the influence, under the control of the Soviet authorities, barely knows anything. How heavyweight is that aveira?
Well,
Not very. Now, what about those who, within that, if you read the diaries, it's an amazing thing, the Rayatz. The Lubavitcher Rebbe Yosef Yitzchak. What's amazing is usually you read a biography of a gadol, you have to wonder how much of it is painted by the biographer's perception, right? It's very challenging to get a good biography of another gadol that really reflects the person's greatness. This is a very rare instance where the biography was written by who? Who wrote the Rayatz's biographies?
I don't remember.
He did. He
Somebody
did.
just the new one though.
Oh yeah.
Brand new, not
Okay, if it's a brand new one, I
no.
guess not. But it is fascinating. He was apparently a prolific writer. He wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, and he simply recorded his own experiences. And those are fascinating things to read. But and it's also it's written by the person himself. So if it says what he was feeling, it's actually authentic. It's not somebody figuring out what he probably was feeling, which is often off. But the networks that they had. It's mind-boggling. And okay, I'm tempted to just get caught up in that, but I'm not going to do that now. It's actually worth going on about some of the things that he writes there. But so let's say we take, you have 100 people have been Mechalel Shabbos in communist Russia. And then you have one person is holding on to Shabbos at all costs. So, it's quite likely that if we measure the pounds altogether, that one person's pounds of his mitzvah might outweigh all the weight of the averus going on the other side. With me on this? Following the cheshbon? Which means that we don't know if at the end of the day, in Shamayim, maybe the period in communist Russia, if you take into account the resistance that was going on, whether it was a network, like the Lubavitchers, like the Novardikers, so that whole networks, or whether it was the individuals, there were individuals who weren't connected to any network who heroically were holding up their own faithfulness and even raising families like that. An amazing book called To Remain a Jew. I don't know if you've
Yes.
seen that. Rabbi Yitzchak Silver, that's right. Mind-boggling how he was not supported by a network, but he raised his family with the full standards of a person raising a family in Bnei Brak. So it may turn out that Hashem says it's true. It was a very dark period, but look what it produced. Maybe the weight of the heroism and of the accomplishments of that period actually outweighs all the darkness. We don't know. So we have to say the same for our times. It's true. We are in we're in an environment that's deteriorating. We are in lower times than earlier times. There are so many challenges, but who knows if that itself is what's pronouncing and highlighting the greatness of efforts that we're making in our limited ways. And I'd say even more than that, people who, I'm talking about people who are living from and maybe being sure to hold on to the standards. That's a person who is not and went through whatever they went through or was exposed to whatever they were exposed to, but are living with certain morals, with certain standards, etc., that are pushing against the current of the times. This is the greatness of Klal Yisrael that Hashem is waiting for in our times. We have to appreciate the Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim at that 49th level of Tumah. Still, not everybody went out. Why? Because Hashem wanted to see from those people at the 49th level of Tumah, they're serving idols. But where were they holding in terms of their loyalty to their people? That was one of the important tests that was characterizing people who did not have, again, there's all kinds of different ways of approaching this when we talk about the Jews in Mitzrayim before the redemption. It's a big subject. But I'm right now saying in a very broad way. People who didn't have the tradition. There was a line of tradition. Shevet Levi had the tradition. There were those who had the tradition, but there were Jews who were disconnected from it, who were serving Avodah Zarah, but in various ways they were being refined by the ordeals rather than filling with them in terms of their dedication to their brethren, their loyalty to their own standards, rather than say, we just want to be like Egyptians. And say, no, we might be the underdog, but look at the quality of the character of our people versus theirs. We want to hold on to that, even if we don't understand exactly what it's about and where it came from. So there's a lot of greatness that can be brought out davka in the darker times, the lower times, and we were given that role. It's a role at a point in history that many of the great people from the Gemara said they understood the difficulties of the period preceding Mashiach. And what a few Chachamim in the Gemara said was, let it come, but let me not be there. And you know what? Hashem said, you're the ones who I'm choosing to be there. Not simple times. But it carries a very special place in terms of Hashem's plan for history and in terms of the greatness that Klal Yisrael is providing Hashem with. And like we said, the Kuzari, that the generation after Mashiach will look back and say, wow. So you have to realize that we are on a pedestal. We opened the subject. This is touching the tip of the iceberg, but let's appreciate this point, these points. Let's appreciate what every ounce of our effort in these times makes to appreciate how we are constituting those sparks of light that are still shining even as the darkness is getting thicker, and to appreciate the value that that carries for Hashem.
So, my comment would be that
I'm just going to stop the recording.
it being